listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support. This movie review also comes for subscribers at Time Lord level or above, an uncut, unedited, longer video version of the review. Become a subscriber and check it out.
So I think it was probably 2010. I heard about this really, really cool, twisty thriller that Rob Reiner was going to be directing, starring Harrison Ford and Zac Efron. And it was called You Belong to Me. And it was meant to be a throwback, but also very cutting edge in terms of the suspense and whatnot. And I thought, ooh, I can't wait for that to happen. I hope it really happens. And then I saw it go in development. I'm like, well, there goes that. And cut to a decade later, it finally comes out with a worse title, Every Breath You Take, not as A-list actors, maybe like high B-list and one C-list. It turns, you could see coming a mile away. Yeah, so here we are. Wishes do come true. Anyway, the movie that I am talking about, of course, is Every Breath You Take. My name is Frank, and with me to talk about this lovely entry into the thriller, but not quite thriller genre, is Mark.
Hello, always good to be here, even if it's for something like this.
Jordan.
All right, I'm just going to warn you, don't stand so close to me with every breath you take. I have all of these ready to go.
You were burning with that.
She's got all the police jokes you could ever want, which are all...
Well, everything, every little thing she does is magic, isn't it?
Oh, damn it!
You string them all together, they're far more brilliant than this script ever hoped to be.
But did they put the script in a bottle first?
God damn, you're
wrong. Come on, Frank, join in.
You're welcome.
We're going clockwise here.
They should have, and they should have just watched it float away, like, quite honestly. They really should have. But that was Jen.
Here to say that, yes, I have been personally victimized by the lack of twistiness of this plot. It's true.
We all have. Anyway, yes, the film is called Every Breath You Take.
It should have been called The Glass House, and that would have been a better movie.
That was a better movie, and I did not like that movie.
Same.
That movie makes you go, oh yeah, remember Lili Sobieski? That was a fun time.
Oh, yeah. She had a 15 minute, didn't she?
I mean, I'd say it was a solid 20. Joan of Arc was wonderful.
Does anybody notice how we're drifting away from this movie? Almost.
Oh, wait,
on
there
purpose.
Was a movie.
Yeah, I know, because we're talking about better projects than this one was. Anyway, yeah, this movie, I guess we should give it the time of day, even though it's more than it gave us.
Can we start with the title? Look, they never justify the title. What is that about? Why?
Yeah, Every Breath You Take. Well, let me talk about what it's about first, okay. What little it is about.
If you must.
Casey Affleck plays a psychiatrist.
That's funny by itself.
Named Philip.
A morally questionable psychiatrist.
Oh my God.
He's the most comatose psychiatrist on film ever.
Boris Karloff would be more dynamic in this role.
Just vacuously broody.
I'd go to that session, absolutely. Anyway, Casey Affleck plays
Drink for
Philip.
Every time we segue away from the actual point of this review. This is now a drinking game, because that's the only way I suggest you getting through this review and or the movie.
Well, that was my MO for both. That was my plan for both, yeah. Anyway, Casey Affleck plays Philip, who when we meet him is going through a very tough time with his family. His wife, Grace, played by Michelle Monaghan, and their daughter, whose name is down here, Lucy, played by India Isley.
Isley.
Yeah.
The only character with range.
They're going through a really hard time because a couple of years ago, or I guess a year before, their son died in a really tragic car accident. And that has understandably put a cloud on this entire family and their day to day. And they're just basically going through the motions, trying their hardest. He's a psychiatrist. She is a realtor. They're all a bunch of messes, and understandably so. Anyway, he has a patient who is not doing so well. She offs herself. And almost immediately pops in her brother.
James Flagg with two G's.
Two G's, bro.
James Flagg with two G's. Just like Fanny Flagg, who wrote Fry Green Tomatoes. There we go.
Or American Flagg, a really good first comic book.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, he shows up kind of sad and distraught that his sister has killed herself. And he slowly, so imperceptibly, starts inserting himself into this family's life. And what do you know? That ain't all that good. And stuff happens. Credits.
That's about how it is, too.
Yeah, that's a like fair assessment. Yeah.
Progression.
Disjointed progression.
Progression.
That's nonlinear.
Yet a little more progression.
Yeah, I mean, you could say he had them wrapped around his finger.
Dr. Jordan Crane, what did you think of this? Apart from, like, all the glee you felt with every, like, police joke you could make popping in your head throughout the film.
Look, clearly this man was a king of pain.
Oh.
And it just, I told you, I got them all.
Okay, additionally, drink for every police joke.
Oh, you're going to die.
Yes.
Let's force it. And they have a dog named Zendada Mundada, too.
Look, that would be murder by numbers. Take another. But in all seriousness.
I'm out of tea.
I did love Murder by Numbers. That
movie was a great movie.
I actually did enjoy that movie. About, yes. Clearly, again.
Yeah.
You know, this humor is lost on people that don't like the police, right?
I will say I didn't quite hate this. I mean, I liked it at first, but the more I did think about it, and I actually did give it a bit another viewing.
Oh, okay.
Why?
This movie's kind of, I don't fucking know. I guess to check my integrity, why would I do that?
That's your first mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, having integrity. This movie just loses itself. It just goes all over the place. The twist is stupid.
You want to call it that?
The biggest air quotes possible.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And I did think, hey, this could be interesting. But yeah, you know, movies like fucking Pacific Heights and...
I have a question for you. Like, at what point, I guess for everybody, when did you see the twist?
About 30 seconds into the movie and or before the movie started after watching the trailer.
Me too.
Okay.
I'm going to say about halfway, only because there wasn't enough clues to quite lead on that early, for me at least, that it was this person and not, you know, the brother. So I'll give the movie enough credit for that, you know, I couldn't tell quite off the bat. But as it went on, yeah, it just got worse. I will say, I do kind of like how this movie looks. I think there's some excellent...
Yeah,
it does have that really, like, sort of crushed, like, cold look to it, where there's, like, a lacking in emotion everywhere, which is really, really great.
It's a great Washington State film. Yeah. It feels like Washington State. Yeah. I felt like home.
And the lighting is excellent all throughout. Acting was pretty good, but yeah, you mentioned the daughter, who is the most captivating in this movie. Mm-hmm.
Jen, what did you think?
It is indeed a thing that happened that I experienced. Thank you and good night. No.
It wasn't a dream. There you go. It wasn't a dream.
Right? It was all a dream. So I agree with Jordan. It was pretty. You got to give it credit for that. The person who actually did the filming of this project, you made an A+. Thank you for that. The sound design also great. Other than there were times when the mixing was a bit off for me. I had to pump up the volume and then the action scenes were too loud because the voices were a bit muffled in places. And there are some moments where some hard-hitting plot points happen very quickly in the dialogue, because this movie is very much about I'm going to tell you to death rather than I'm going to show you. So if you're not paying attention to the words, you can lose some stuff.
Yeah.
Like the allusion. There's an allusion, a connection that the bad guy in the movie makes to a previous character that if you weren't paying attention in the very beginning of the movie, you'd have missed it all entirely. And that's like the one moment of, aha, this place is this whole thing and why this has happened and how it makes sense.
Don't you feel it's kind of a cop-out in a way when they just try to insert it into the dialogue rather than actually like having people do anything?
Show, don't tell. Filmmaking 101. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this film is all exposition.
Yeah, less exposition. Agreed.
Like, the things that they chose to show were like ad nauseum, just incredibly long without any dynamic range. This is a scene that is happening and is continuing to happen and is continuing to happen. Okay, and now we're moving on to something else. Fine.
It's very Dickensian, but without the quality of Dickens.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I wanted to watch this film was because of the throwback qualities of it. And Mark, I know you were the first one to sign on for this. Was that one of the reasons that you wanted to? as well?
Well, I hadn't signed on for anything, so I signed up for four properties, and I got two of them, and this is one of the properties I got. So I was like, okay, that's good. That expands me as a person to watch something I don't particularly have a feeling for. And I, actually, I usually get more out of that than, like, you know, watching something that I already know what it's going to be like, and I enjoy that genre or something.
Yeah.
As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, it's a suspense film. I like suspense films. 10 minutes into it, they leave a hell of a smoking gun on the stage, and you're like, okay, I already know how this is all going to go. I mean, all of it. And step by step, inch by inch, it progresses so predictably that I was like, man, who writes this stuff? Because
it was painful to watch because we already knew where it was going.
Oh, my God.
I actually found myself forwarding through scenes because I'm like, I know exactly what's happening here and I don't want to waste the time. Just like, keep going.
I don't blame you.
The saddest part about this film is that moment when you realize, oh, this is all they've got.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, it's pretty
bad. There's
nothing
up anyone's sleeves here. This is literally, like, we've seen it all.
To me, even the twist in this movie isn't the twist. It's the fake out before the twist.
Yeah.
It's the, oh, crap, this is 10 minutes before the end of the film. This is how they're leaving it. Like, we're not even going to get the big twist I was expecting. Really? And then they drop it on you with 5 minutes to spare at the end of the movie very haphazardly. I'm like, could you just have cut half an hour of the crap that happened before and, like, make this happen better?
So
please?
Stupid. I mean, I know the truth hits everybody in sort of different ways, but it's so stupid. Yeah. I mean, in the final act, that's predictable as all hell.
I got that.
It's just like, even the good acting of the daughter is like,
Mm-hmm.
I don't give a shit. Would this have been better if they actually had gotten Dan Stevens and not name brand Dan Stevens? Probably.
I was still picturing, because when I heard about it, it was Harrison Ford and Zac Efron. So I was like, would I have liked this? Would this have been any better with Zac Efron and Harrison Ford with Rob Reiner directing? Nah.
I'd have been more disappointed that Harrison Ford didn't show discernment enough to pass on this project. But wait, he did.
This is a very Harrison Ford type of project. But
there's a reason why it went through two directors and maybe two different types of casting before it got, you know, it was really developed.
I mean, at least we'd get the finger point of doom. That'd be something.
The main thing that moves this from a nonchalant, all right, I experienced this, fine, whatever, which would have made it like a 7, maybe a 6.5. The thing that drops it down to like a 4 for me is the main action sequence that happens 2/3 of the way through the movie, which is meant to be like, this is the pinnacle, this is the twist where the crazy happens. They do all this setup. It's this big ass long 15-minute setup.
Yeah.
And then the thing happens, and the thing is happening, and you're like, all right, it's gonna get good. This is gonna be dramatic and tragic and ridiculous. And then it just abruptly comes screeching to a halt, literally and metaphorically. And then ends. And then it moves on to this next phase. And I'm like, why would a bad guy...
It's really murder by number, isn't it?
Yeah. Why would this guy go to all this trouble for this thing to happen, to build this thing and orchestrate it, just at the last minute to pull up short, literally and metaphorically, and then not? Why?
Well, clearly there was no synchronicity in any of this. It was just haphazard.
It was. Well, I got to imagine that this is the current, like, iteration of the screenplay. I mean, over a decade, you can only imagine how long.
Did they just, like, go through a writing session and just, like, oh, this is actual plot, throw that away. Let's get to the plot and then throw that out.
There's only one credited writer, but you can only imagine how many drafts there have been over the years.
Yeah.
And I got to also, like, wonder, because the director, who's made two other movies that I'm aware of, anyway, Terminal being one, which I liked up until like the end, but that one as well suffers from like two endings, and the second one just kills everything that came before it. And Inheritance, which Jordan and I reviewed, and which I likewise loathed because it was just so bland and base, and there was really, it just lay there. And I think that's the thing here with this movie. It just lays there.
Stop trying to make fake endings happen. They're not happening in this aspect.
Uh-huh. And I rather enjoyed Inheritance. I just didn't quite like the twist there, but I can honestly say I would rewatch Inheritance.
Well, you rewatched this.
I sadly did rewatch it. I was like, nope, not doing that again.
No third time for me.
Blander than a bowl of oatmeal.
Oh God, I was counting the minutes on this one. I hate minute counters.
Same.
I know.
But I'm just like over and over again.
I was doing as well. And I, you know, what bugged me is I was trying to give this movie the benefit of the doubt all the way through. Even up until the end, I was like, oh, they're not going to do that. It's not going to be that. And then it was that.
It was that.
And then it was that. And it's like, well, all right, I tried to give you guys a bone, but whatever. Anyway, I think we should just go into final thoughts because I want this movie out of my life, quite frankly. So, Mark, why don't you go ahead and get us started?
Sure. Well, let me also add that I really agree with Jordan, and I enjoy the synchronicity, too. Anyway, getting back into this, I think that this is a rote movie. It was done mechanically. It has no imagination. I think it's a Lifetime movie. I think if you reverse the genders, it'd be a Lifetime movie for the elderly.
I think that's a smear on Lifetime movies, really.
Sorry, Lifetime.
If you reverse the genders or just the ages, or you mean the ages?
Well, usually there's a female obsessive protagonist.
Oh, right. Okay.
Like Swim Fan or?
Well, yeah, kind of like that, you know.
God, Swim Fan.
Hey, check out all you Swim fans out.
There's a lot of like really minor Lifetime movies that echo this plot, but you know, you want to go into the mainstream, obviously Cape Fear. Personally, What About Bob? What About Bob? This reminds me of, that was a good movie. This was not.
I love me some What About Bob. Yeah,
me too, because he's always there. Wherever you go, there's James Flagg. Oh, there he is again.
Yeah.
Okay, so what did I like about it? I did like the way it was shot. I liked the lighting. That's what I like to call these movies, blue light specials.
Yeah.
Because that's a there's a lot one. Of blue light in them. And I gotta admit, it may be a trope, but it's a trope I enjoy, you know?
It's always effective. Like, it's an effective way to make a film.
Oh, yeah.
It never not works.
Oh, yeah.
For my money, anyway.
I mean, James Cameron loves that, and I eat it up too, to be fair. So I really don't have much to say about this, because there's really nothing to this. I mean, when you figure out the entire plot literally within, yeah, I'd say the first 5 minutes of the movie, I would argue that there's nothing to it. It is just, I don't even know how this got approved. That being said, it looked good. The acting was adequate, although Casey Affleck plays a psychiatrist who's clearly taking his own opioids.
Yeah.
And even when his career is under fire and everything's falling apart, he only kind of gets mad at one point. And even that's kind of limp.
He's so comatose in this film.
I guess I would rate this 4 out of 10 really sad stuff bunnies.
Dr. Jordan Crane.
You know, on any other day, I would stand behind my camel and tell my friend Roxanne, yeah, this kind of movie's good for it. This is awesome. It's not. I just ham-fisted those last ones in. I don't give
a... I was like, yeah, stuff them in there, Jordan. Stuff them in
it
there.
It starts out good, and I really wanted to like it. I really did, because, yeah, I'm a bit of a sucker for these sort of things, and I like how methodical they could get. But this is fucking limp-dicked. One memorable acting performance, great lighting.
Agreed, obviously.
And a dumb, 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 dumb twist. Hold on, how many dumbs did I put in my... Dumb, dumb twist. Okay.
Needs a few more.
Not enough.
No, clearly not enough. I it just...
The twistiness of a limp noodle.
Exactly. I got nothing else. This movie kind of sucks. I'll give it 3 out of 10 Sting solo albums where he's just meditating about tantric sex.
Hot.
Oh, I love
That's
Sting.
Way hotter than this film deserves.
Sting is never going to not be hot.
Agreed. Drink for getting off topic.
Yeah. Jen, your final thoughts.
This is indeed a thing that happened. Save yourself the trouble and go watch any of the films we've listed in this review that are better. Ugh. It's pretty, but completely vacuous, like many people's dating lives. I'm always happy to see more films from home. Washington State, the Seattle area, gorgeous, love it, here for it.
I'm here right now.
I miss it, I'm coming to visit.
I'm in Ollie.
That was the Pacific Northwest then? Because I was wondering, because you just think, oh, well, Canada.
Yes,
oh, yeah,
Washington.
Totally.
Oh, okay.
License cool. plates on all the cars, Washington State.
Oh, nice. It was,
they got the mist right.
Not necessarily in Seattle, but it's somewhere along the Puget Sound, because they show many scenes of the Puget Sound, that's where it's at. Surprisingly, zero ferry boats in this film, which is amazing, because everybody who shoots in Washington's like, hey, ferry boats, let's put them in the film. But that's fine. That's a thing. I'm going to give this solely for Lucy's dynamic range and how pretty it was, because I miss home and I'm a sap. I'm going to give it 4.5 out of 10 implausibly unavailable online books in the 21st century. What even?
Oh, God, I forgot about
what
that.
Even? Does what? Not exist. I can find 16th century Arabic horseback archery manuals online. You can't not find an indie book written within the last 10 years. Come on.
Yeah, this was not worth waiting over a decade to watch. It really made me sad for everybody in it, because these are good actors and they're very gorgeous actors. I mean, Casey Affleck and Sam Claflin, that's a really cool sandwich. But I don't see any reason why anybody would get any pleasure from this film unless this is literally the first thriller they've ever seen in their lives.
That's a sad thought.
That is sad. A and B, that they would get pleasure out of this is the second sad thought. Everything here is transparent or underdone. It is pretty to look at. It does have great self-contained element to it, which I really love with a good thriller. And I do like that there is something compelling about coming in, encountering a character, in this case, character of Philip, who is at his lowest and very broken and already in a dark place, having to go to an even darker place and summon up the will to fight against it and to come out of all of it.
That's true.
It's a good idea that was not followed up with here in a very good film. I'm going to give this 5 out of 10 bosses that you want to have over for dinner, because, man, he was like BFFs with his boss.
Buddy.
Well, yeah. She was married to his brother, so,
Oh, is that it?
Oh, you mean in real life?
No, in the film.
Oh, in the film. Okay, I didn't know.
I didn't even
Lon
get
Lady
that.
Was married to his brother, who he goes to visit about the book, who's the publisher.
That's right. Okay, yeah, you're right.
Which is why when he comes through the front door, the daughter's like, hey, Uncle Philip, how's life?
I just thought that was like a
welcome.
I don't drink, but this movie made me feel like I was drinking.
I checked out by that point. But anyway, yeah, there are a lot of movies to go watch besides. Don't watch this. Go watch Still of the Night. Go watch The Late Show. Go watch fucking Clue.
Props to India Isley, though, playing like a 14-year-old when she's 28. You go, girl. Those jeans for days.
Yeah.
That was the most awkward kiss I've ever seen in my life, and I felt dirty watching it. Yeah. It was awful. There was a lot more tongue than there should have been in that kiss.
You could hear the saliva.
He's hotness, but... Oh.